Kaczynski, Sam Nation, here on the 30th of November. Almost at the end of the month. It is the end of the month today, right? Tomorrow's December 1st, the official start to the Christmas holidays. And this, of course, unless you're a shopping center, in which case Christmas began in October. Look, I'm not even going to say it. I'm not going to say that we're, should I? Behind the orange curtain, reporting to you from the new Soviet satellite republic of Orange County. Orange County is now left wing. So where we used to safely be here, producer Robbie and I and the team, protected here in Nutjob, California, by a thin crust of conservative sanity, we've now been stripped of this protective layer and are fending for ourselves. So, how's it going? it's going. All right, what is this Mueller thing? Big news today that Trump is person number one or individual one in these various investigations that Mueller is conducting. Nothing new here. I'll explain that. And before I get to, though, to all of this intrigue with the Mueller probe and Trump-Russia collusion, I have a general observation about Trump. I don't know if you've noticed this, but right before Thanksgiving, I felt like there were a number of sort of wacky pronouncements. Now, Trump was getting a little... I think he was losing people. I think there's a number of things that it was right before the holidays. He was out there. He was doubling down on some things and then talking about who he's going to replace and put in the UN role. And he wanted that chick that was from Fox News, and a lack of seriousness, I think, was the way it was described in some circles. And I want to address this because I have an observation that I think is generally true about Trump and true about some other people, too. But in Trump's case, he is an extremely capable communicator, right? Even if you are if you hate him, right? Even his opponents, they'll call him a demagogue and a rabble rouser. But the point behind it all is Trump is extremely effective at taking complicated issues and boiling them down into an essential thought. This is why, long before he was a presidential candidate, his Twitter account was gangbusters. And it wasn't because Trump was some incredible celebrity. It was because he was very good at putting together sound bites. He's a sound bite guy. That's what Twitter is, right? You put it in 140 characters, whatever it is. So this is a talent. You either have it or you don't. It's not learned. The problem with it is that occasionally you get a misfire. Occasionally, there's something out there that just cannot be reduced quickly into a thought. And the example I have are the fires. Well, you get the fires up in Paradise, for example, in California, devastating. People died. Trump gets out there and tries to condense what is actually a fairly complex issue having to do with forest management, environmental regulation, people obsessing about some gnat or squirrel or whatever endangered cricket is out there in a rural area and consequently don't, plow for fire breaks and that kind of thing. And these are the consequences of such inaction. But Yeah, he just went right into it. He started tweeting about it. He was putting out these short, conclusory statements is how I would describe them. And it was at the wrong time. And you got to get people to the conclusion of the thought. And to do that, this required more than what Twitter is willing to give you in characters. And he's done this before. Gold Star family. It's a great example. Remember during the campaign, there's a Gold Star family. that Hillary trotted up there and he attacked them. It all makes sense. It makes sense to me. I understood what he was doing. It didn't play well. So what you have is you got a guy that 90% of the time it's funny, it's right to the point, it gets right to the heart of it, and when it's not, it's a misfire. But he recovers from it. So for all of you, and I've heard from a number of you, you're a little panicking, what's he doing? He's getting a little weird. Yeah, if there's a misfire, you get crickets in the audience, maybe the crickets are endangered, depends on where you're at. In California, everything's endangered. But regardless, this is it. Now in my opinion, I think it happens more when he feels like he's in a foxhole and people are taking shots at him. The only real consequence at the end of the day of this Mueller investigation is that it's put Trump on the defensive, and it's put him on the defensive for 2 years. And make no mistake about it, this is exactly what the left intended to do. This was never a truth-seeking mission. It was never truly about getting to discover facts related to Trump colluding with Putin's Russia. Everyone inside of the Obama administration, it was the Obama Justice Administration that initiated this investigation. They knew back then it was horse rubbish. It was nothing more than hyperbole, exaggerations, and the like. And they knew from the get-go, I tell you this, they knew from the get-go that this was a way they could sabotage Trump. And it's working. It's working to the extent that, well, one, it's tremendously distracting to be under investigation, whether that investigation reveals anything or not. Let me give you an example. So you've got this news today, right? Yesterday, Thursday, we find out that Michael Cohen, Trump's crazy nut job, a turncoat attorney who's now testifying to Mueller, giving Mueller hours and hours of testimony. He's saying, look, we didn't stop the Moscow condo development in January, as I had testified to Congress. We actually stopped it in June of 2016. So instead of January 2016, June 2016. And what is this building about? Trump was going to build a giant condo high rise in Moscow. Whoop-de-doo. And he was going to. Now, wait for it. Here is the bomb, bursting news that we got yesterday. He was going to give Putin a $50 million apartment in this building. Do you know what their reasoning was, by the way, in doing that? Did you believe that Trump was going to become president in June of 2016? Because if you did, I hope you took out some bets. I did. I don't even think Trump did. Okay, he had barely sealed up the nomination at that point, right? It was May, end of May, Trump got all the delegates that he needed. And he was headed, but we hadn't even had the convention yet. And what were the betting odds at that point? What were Nate Silver's numbers on Trump winning the election? So what my only point with all of this is, the talk about the internal discussions about giving a free apartment to Putin wasn't done in terms of let's give Putin something let's make nice to Putin so when I become president. No, Putin's the most important person in the country. They're building this monster. They didn't end up building it, but they were planning to build this monstrosity of a condo high-rise, luxury condo high-rise development. And the way you salt the mine in a project like this is you bring in a famous celebrity, i.e. Putin, and you give him an apartment. The neighborhood I live in, they did this. That we've got I'm not going to say who it is. We've got some famous people that live around the corner. I'm convinced, I don't know it for sure, but I'm convinced the developers gave them the land to build their houses on. Why? because they can say, hey, fancy neighborhood, guess who your neighbors already are? They're building a house and you want to live here too. That's how these things work. This is how developers work. Incidentally, it's the exact freaking opposite of what Hillary Clinton was doing at the same time. And what do I mean by that? Hillary Clinton was the one getting the free stuff. I almost said the SH word. I'm so excited. Right? Russia, Uranium One, they're giving money to the Clintons. And here, what's the big scandal? Are you freaking kidding me? The big scandal is that Trump is giving money to Putin? I mean, if I was the voting public in the Soviet Union, excuse me, talking here from Orange County, Mother Russia, I would be concerned that Putin was on the take by the United States. When you're considering accountability and, bribery and all that kind of stuff, if you're dealing with that issue, right? I mean, I'm perfectly fine if we're bribing our foreign leaders, other foreign leaders to be on our side, right? That's good for us. But public accountability requires that our leaders not take bribes or be on the take by foreign governments. So I'm baffled how I'm telling you if they everything that leaked yesterday and today from what Mueller is doing, if they prove it all black letter on paper as clear as can be, it ain't no crime. It's just not a crime. The only issue here is, did you lie under oath? And the perjury trap, that's the big banana here. And that's the only banana that they have. That's it. This whole thing is so laughable, but it's distracting him. If you were Trump, you get this instantly, right? Imagine you're him. You know you haven't done anything wrong. Come on, yeah. Your only crime was you thought in the back of your head, you know, look, I'm probably not going to win this presidency, and this campaign has cost me an S ton of money. So what I'm going to need to do is I need to hustle and get some things commercially moving so that come at the end of November, December into 2017, I still have revenue. This is how any one of us would be thinking. But certainly, absolutely, was not in any way, shape, or form colluding with Russia to sabotage Hillary Clinton or to subvert democracy or whatever. And even if you prove all of that, it's still not a crime. Do you see how this is so absurd? I mean, it just blows my mind. Well, you do see, because you listen to the program, you're well informed and ahead of the curve. Whereas everybody else who's lapping up the odds and ends left behind by CNN and MSNBC just believes all this is relevant in some way. The root of all of this is there is a half the country that wants to believe that Trump is a horrible guy. He is the cause of everything that is wrong with our state. What they don't understand is that Trump is a symptom of all of this. Right. Trump is a direct consequence of our rulers, be it Bush, Obama, you got Clinton's, the ruling elites that have partnered with the media, that have absolutely had bamboozled us into a social contract that we never wanted to participate in. We don't want to be, we don't want to turn over our internet to a global body. We don't want the UN regulating us. If you live in Europe, you don't want Brussels telling you what to do. I'm referring to the head of the capital of the European Union. We don't want open borders. We don't want to get taxed to death. We want economic opportunity. We want freedom. And in all of this, Trump was an answer, right? In 2016, they answered all this, and they still don't get it. The very people that created the environment that allowed Trump to rise still want to come up with some creationist fable for why this is all happening. And half of it is that they don't understand, they truly don't get it. And the other half of it is that regardless the cause, they want to dispose of him, and they fail to do so in a democratic fashion. And so they have to invent all this horse crap and sabotage him in a very unfair way. He just needs to stay strong, stay focused, and everything will work out. More on this when we come back. Also, great Mia Love soundbites. The losing congressman, Republican congressman in Utah, she had a hell of a press conference. I know this isn't national news or anything, but it is comedy gold. So when we come back, I will I'll get to that this hour for sure. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem, and Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sure, yeah, this is exactly what developers do, this the bringing in high profile people to buy, you know, they give them something that at the time really has no real value. I mean, it does, has some value. But the what we were talking about here, Sam Rojofsky, by the way, Sam Nation Radio Network, we were talking about the condo development. And internally, the Trump people said, if we give Putin a $50 million condo, then we will be able to charge $250 million more for the remaining condos. New golf courses do this all the time. You know, Tiger Woods in his heyday, you know how many free memberships that guy got at golf clubs? And the reason why? Easy. You know, you want Tiger Woods. Oh, you want to join this club? Tiger is a member. That's how this works. But one of the things that really baffles me, I attributed it to laziness, but also just stupidity and a lack of knowledge. Maybe these reporters for the New York Times and the Washington Post, they have no real world experience whatsoever. They're dolts. They all went to top schools. They all got straight A's. Well, maybe not all of them, but they all, you know, they all valedictorian in their high school, their prep schools. And, you know, and then they go off to college, get journalism school. What, I have no idea what that consists of. Story time. They probably sit in a circle and pass a talking stick. Anyway, they come out of school and they're I guess they know how to operate a checking account and a credit card, and they occasionally pay their bills, but they have no idea what real estate development is. They have no clue. And they can't even evaluate statements based on what they, you know, how they roughly translate to real world scenarios. So there it is. So then you see headlines that of course are baffling. And my favorite one, you know, smoking gun. Trump tried to give Putin a free apartment. And so the Clintons, in the meantime, were collecting hundreds of millions of dollars in their Clinton Crime Family Foundation from all over the world. Some real bad actors. This is just laughable. And this probably is why Trump is out there tweeting, be careful. Be careful, you guys, because you come after me. Trump is rightly concerned that this Pelosi, you see, Pelosi was reelected just by her House Democratic colleagues, so it still has to go to full House. But Pelosi is going to turn over the congressional investigators on the Trump administration. And Trump's saying, you guys be careful. Careful what you ask for, because I will return fire with fire. He's got tweeted a picture with Rod Rosenstein, the acting AG, the guy who's in charge of the probe, right? And the Clintons and you know, the cast of characters, they're all behind bars, you know, and it's this, the image, and everybody's like, how could he do this? It's not presidential. And they're hand wringing over it. And what is Trump doing? And I'm telling you, the message is clear. And it's not Putin-esque. He's not being Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia. He's freaking joking, but at the same time, there's a subtle message. If you guys want to investigate me for BS, have I got some dirt on you? Frankly, Trump's kept his powder dry for the most part, right? Everybody thinks that, you know, he's out there and he's a hothead and he's impulsive. But that really is more the imagery he puts out there on social media and the way he talks, which, by the way, I think is part of his charm and his unique ability to connect with people. But behind the scenes, where you judge always people more by their actions, here's a guy that, you know, had at every rally during the campaign, it was chance of lock her up, lock her up, lock her up. And he has resisted efforts or thoughts of pursuing a criminal case against Hillary Clinton, even though I strongly believe one would be warranted. So it's an interesting thing. A lot of powder being kept dry, in my opinion. And so behind that little tweet is a large kernel of truth. Okay, Mia Love, you're going to love this. I promise. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rejofsky back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam. Sam Rejofsky. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rejofsky here, Sam Nation, Sam Nation Radio Network, rarely wrong, always right. If I sound refreshed to you, I am. Sorry about last week. We missed last week, the day after Thanksgiving. I did that on purpose. The family and I went down to Barbados, as we do each year. I love Barbados. It's a lovely place. Former British colony. I did the show a few times from down there, didn't I? At least twice, I believe. So those of you who are longer time listeners remember my reporting from Barbados in years past, former British colony. But it's not like Jamaica. The Barbados is a law and order place. Crime is very low. And they, you know, they're a respectful bunch of people. And one of the things is, I guess, in school, unlike here, if you are in public education, perhaps, let's say, Los Angeles Unified School District, where the students run the classroom and the teachers run for cover. In Barbados, by the way, every school, uniform. They all wear uniforms. And you talk back to the teacher, you're going to get hit. Now, I know, this is not a popular thought, but I'm just going to ask you something. When you read these stories about teachers getting, or see the videos, right, the videos of teachers getting shouted down in classrooms, where the students are sitting in their chairs with their saggy pants, chewing on gum, looking like, I don't know, I mean, they look disrespectful. They don't even have to have anything coming out of their mouths. They just look disrespectful. Isn't there a part of you that just wants to say, gosh, we ought to give these teachers cautious? You know, just, you know, like the, you wouldn't get cosh, you know, like a stick. Look it up. Producer Robbie's giving me a fight. Is it a medieval weapon? Well, while producer Robbie's, I'm going to move along with this thought. Anyway, a paddle, whatever. Not a baseball, nothing that would break bones or, you know, or the skin or anything like that. Just something to, I don't know. Let's talk about Mia Love. Robbie isn't finding anything. So Mia, this is a study, friends. This is a study on what not to do in politics. Have you ever lost an election? If you've run for office, okay. I remember high school. I remember that's probably the last thing I ever ran for. And losing publicly, it's tough. Okay? It was tough back in high school. I can't even imagine what it's like as an adult. So Mia Love, she's the black Republican rising star in the party in Utah's 4th congressional district. This is Salt Lake City and a portion of Salt Lake County, some other smaller places, Juab and others. It doesn't matter. But it's a Republican district. The district there is, what, three-quarters Republican, 25% roughly Democrat, just based on registration. And the Democrat there, Ben McAdams, wins the race, right? And it's one of the narratives here about the Trump, the anti-Trump surge, right? The blue wave that is spreading across the country. And I've been telling you this over and over again, that this is the wrong narrative. You're literally being, we all are, being sold a total lie, because it has really nothing to do with Trump. And it has everything to do with a really crappy candidate. So you know how crappy a candidate is, usually you best know, when they lose. And here is, Mia Love had, was it last week, she had this press conference. Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness, it was so bad. And she gets up there and she's blaming everybody. See, when you lose a race, what you do, Mia, is you just go in and be gracious as you possibly can be, because in a district that's three quarters Republican, you have a chance to win it back next time. You only lost by 700 votes. It's nothing. You can get that back. But what did you do? She screwed the pooch. I'm going to tell you about that when we come back, play you the audio. You be the judge. Sam Rojofsky back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rojofsky, yes, producer Robbie figured out that a kosh is a stick, and it's British slang, which is perfect because I was in Barbados and brushing up on my British Creole Bayesian dialect. Anyway, so here we go. Mia Love gives her concession speech, I guess, is what it was. But it was a little fiery. And it wasn't conciliatory in the least. My opinion, this is not what you do politically. So anyway, here is a sample, a little petit fours of the speech. Have a listen.
Good news is, I'm not going away. But now I am unleashed, I am untethered, and I am unshackled. And I can say exactly what's on my mind. I have taken an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. I will continue to do that. I have sworn to protect life at all stages of development, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I will continue to do that. I will continue to raise conservative values while taking people into my heart and into my home, wherever I go. Best of all, I don't need a title or permission to do that. Thank you.
So even with all of that, right, I mean, she's saying I'm unleashed. I always think it's a bad idea for anyone, let alone a black woman, to say she's unshackled. But at any rate, I'm unshackled. I'm free. I can finally speak my mind. And everybody, every reporter in the room basically raised their hand right after she was done talking, raised their hand in unison, go, wait a minute. You've spent two terms in Congress. You're an elected representative. You've got a megaphone. And now you can speak candidly. You know, when Trump criticized her and said, Mia Love showed me no love. You know, the reason Trump is successful, I guess you hate his guts, but the reason Trump is successful is he's pretty damn unshackled. You know? Yeah. He's Donald Unchained. But you obviously, I don't know, what is this with politicians? This is why politicians are losing. And we crave authenticity. I'm not saying Ben, you know, McAdams, her opponent that won the race, necessarily is that per se, but certainly more than her. Now, the best part about this whole thing was her dig at Ben. When you win, you've won at somebody else's expense. Generally, if you've run opposed, if you're running against somebody, there's a loser. And your concession speech. Remember Obama's. You know, Obama spent most of his victory speech talking to the people that didn't vote for him. It's a classy thing to do. So listen to this talking about Ben.
Victory is theirs. I believe that we've elected a wolf in sheep's clothing. But the question remains, at what cost to the people of Utah? There is a cost, and we will pay it. But starting in January, my role will change. And we still have a lot of work to do.
Hey, I believe we've elected a wolf in sheep's clothing. So the best thing here is I get a text from Ben. He's on his way back to the second round of orientation in D.C. And he gets upgraded to Comfort Plus, right? So he got an upgrade. He sits down in his upgraded seat. He looks down the aisle, right? He's in the window. So he's a window seat. And he looks, and at the opposite end, opposite him, what is it, like two seats apart on the opposite side on the aisle, is none other than Mia Love. Can you imagine, right? So she's sitting on the same row as him. He said, well, I was wearing a wool sweater, so I guess that qualifies as wolf in sheep's clothing. Anyway, Sam Rejofsky, back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rejofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
You know, it's funny, speaking of airlines and upgrades and such, there was a news story this week about a mom traveling with a daughter on Southwest Airlines. And the gist of the story was, how dare these airline workers at Southwest mock the little girl? Apparently, the little girl has some disability. I don't know if it was autism or whatnot, but I've read a few different versions of the same story, so I'm trying to remember this here. But do you know why they were mocking her? Do you know why they were making fun of this little girl? Well, because when they go to scan, they went to scan in her boarding pass, they noticed that her name was A, B, C, D, E. That was the name that the mom gave this poor, unfortunate child. It's pronounced, are you wondering how it's pronounced? It's pronounced Absidy, which sounds a lot like Cassidy mixed with abscess, which isn't good, because neither... Well, Absidy. And okay, no. Yeah, the airline people should not have put the little girl's boarding pass, a picture of it, on their social media accounts. They got reprimanded for that. I bet you that's going to be maybe problematic. There's some violations of confidentiality and such that probably are a big no-no. But can we just back up here a little bit? Why do parents do this? Why, if you're a parent and you just wake up and you go, you know what I want to do? On top of putting my child in this you-know-what world, I'm going to give them a hell of a handicap by giving them a totally effed up name. Wait, what are you thinking, woman? And then now she's crying, oh, how dare you make fun of my daughter? I know this is not a popular position to take, right? Because every news story, I looked at a number of them. Every news story had the mom and the daughter as victims, and the mom was speaking to the media, and everybody was like, oh, this is awful. And I get it. But why is nobody saying to the mom, hey, woman, let me ask you something. What the hell is apsity? What were you thinking? Were you, you coming off of a drug high in the hospital, filling out the birth certificate? This is a nutty thing. Do I need to repeat my story about my friend Jeremy? Have I mentioned that story before? I have a friend. It's a long story, but his girlfriend was pregnant with his daughter, and I don't know him that well. But you know, he's in more of an acquaintance. So he's telling me, oh yeah, we're pregnant, we're expecting, you know, it's like 4 or 5 months. I'm so excited to be a dad. And, you know, I'm a dad. And so, you know, I mean, I go, one of the questions I ask people when they're having a kid is, it's a pretty normal question, is what are you going to name the kid? And he goes, oh yeah, we're going to name her Jeremy. And I'm like, is that like Jeremy? What is that? He goes, yeah, you know, it's like my name, you know, it's my name. And it's, you know, but it's like going on a journey. So it's like Jeremy, but going on a journey. And I looked at him and I said, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And he goes, why? And I, well, you know, I hire people. If I saw that name on a resume, Jeremy, I would think that, you know, I would think less of the person. I really would. Yeah, I know there's Freakonomics data that back all this up. It's a fact. I'm not alone in this. But then I made a terrible mistake. I will share this with you just because we're friends. I will share this with you. I sometimes step in things. And so I told him, I said, well, yeah, it just sounds very, I'll just say this. It sounds very African-American. And there was a silence. And Jeremy said, yeah, my girlfriend is African-American. I go, well, it doesn't change anything I've told you. So there's that. Okay. All right. Back when we come back, I got some stuff going on. I want to get into this big case that's going through the Supreme Court right now. Big case. It affects you potentially. And I hope that the Supreme Court makes the right decision. You'll want to hear about this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. And, you know, occasionally, friends, I like to delve into an issue that is maybe a bit, how might I say it, dry? Dry, crusty, not moist. Every time anybody, you know, Thanksgiving, everybody complains about what a dry bird turkey is. You know this? So they're out there talking about how, you know, I know you're shaking your head because I don't know what you do with your birds. They're always, your birds are always moist. But that's the word that always comes to my mind is the M word, right? But it's really a word if you use it and do a little pause after saying it, it makes people extremely uncomfortable. I don't know if you've noticed this. So, you know, people complain about how dry turkey is, and you know, Monday morning after the holiday, that's what everybody's talking about. Oh, I had, you know, I said three Thanksgivings and everybody had turkey and da da da. And you say, well, what you know, have you ever had a moist turkey? And then I add quickly, you should talk to Robbie because you know, that's his specialty. Anyway, yeah. So at any rate, dry subjects. One of these such dry subjects that I keep wanting to share with you, it's one that you've all heard about. You've heard about this phenomenon occurring. You've seen it in the newspaper, and you maybe even have some mixed thoughts on it. but I want to explain it. And it's called civil asset forfeiture. What does that mean? It just means when you do something bad, if you break the law under certain circumstances, the state that you break the law in allows the police to take your stuff that you used, I guess, in the commission of your crime. Now, where this occurs typically with drug dealers and let's say a car or a boat or, you know, other possessions. And the funny thing about it is I think generally the mood about this in the country is, well, they're drug dealers, you know, and they shouldn't be doing drugs. They shouldn't be dealing drugs. And so good for them if they lose their stuff. The problem is that I'm not simpatico to drug dealers by no means. But I do like, you know, the rule of law, and I do like checks and balances, especially when we're talking about law enforcement. Now, I'm a pro law enforcement guy. That's, I would say, colored by some experiences, many experiences as an attorney, where I've seen abuses, really ugly abuses by law enforcement. And I'll tell you why those abuses occur. Almost uniformly, they happen where you give a gun, a badge, a lot of power and authority to someone. And that power and authority is in the context of that department, that city, that area, because of demographics or politics or whatnot, is unchecked. There's nobody saying, no, that's not acceptable. You can't beat up the suspect. And in all the police shooting cases, I think without exception, all the police shooting cases I've ever had where there's a death that results or serious injury, there's been a pattern of bad behavior that the cops were let off on, right? Bad cops don't just start kind of randomly shooting people. They start first by, you know, beating a suspect up or maybe detaining a suspect longer than they're entitled to or forcing confessions and that type of thing. And we have the Constitution that prevents that from happening, or at least theoretically does. So the issue here is there's a guy, his name is Tyson Timms, and the story is he ends up coming into quite a bit of money, about $80,000, and he blows it all. He blows it all on drugs, and then he also buys himself, because, you know, people have priority problems when they come into large sums of money, he buys himself a Land Rover. So if you drive a Land Rover, I know we have listeners that drive Range Rovers. If you drive one, know that you're driving a vehicle of choice of druggies that come into large sums of money. Anyway, so $41,000 brand new Range Rover, and he gets arrested with 2 grams of heroin. It's about $225 worth of drugs. He tries to sell these drugs, these 2 grams of heroin, to a couple of undercover cops. So, yeah, this guy's like genius numero uno, right? So he sells this heroin to these cops and a tiny little amount. And in the process of getting arrested and getting convicted, they take his vehicle. So now we have something in the 14th Amendment, excessive bail, right? And a bail, right, we typically think of that as you buying your freedom, right? You buying the ability to walk free during sentences. But bail also applies to property, bailment of property. And the idea of being basically fined, and this also has to do with fines, being either having a bailment expire or a fine being levied of $44,000, the value of the vehicle, on a sale of drugs that is tiny, is minuscule. Do you know what 2 grams is? I've never done any drugs in my life. I've cooked. 2 grams, nothing. You could blow on it, it would go away. If it was a powder. I don't know what heroin is, but anyway. So, it's nothing. It's nothing. And this guy loses his car. Now, the state where it happened, I want to say it was Indiana. They say where it happened. The trial court, the court of appeals, they both say, no, 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 this is excessive. This is excessive. And it goes all the way up to the Indiana Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, the highest court in Indiana. And they say, no, you know, we don't believe that the Constitution has been properly incorporated to the states. And this is just a fancy way of saying that that the Bill of Rights, excessive fines, in the there's an incorporation clause in the 14th Amendment that makes that Bill of Rights apply to all the states. And we've gone through various court cases, and it's kind of boring, but we've gone through various court cases where the Supreme Court has said, yes, this particular amendment to the Constitution applies to all states. And they've gone through those one by one. And apparently this one, it's a little mushy. Finally, this case is in the hands of the Supreme Court. They had oral arguments, which means they had the open session where the lawyers argue their case and answer questions that the judges give them, justices give them. And the people that were in the room that were paying attention seem to think that the judges are leaning toward properly incorporating excessive fines, cruel and unusual punishment, and such to all the states, and specifically tackling this asset forfeiture thing. I think, friends, this is excellent, and it's an excellent thing not just for the rule of law, but there's a very important thing here that occurs that is an unintended consequence of civil asset forfeiture. If the police, the Irvine Police Department, I live in Irvine, so Irvine Police Department can seize a $50,000 vehicle over 2 grams of drugs. Pretty profitable enterprise, don't you think? Some good money in that. Now, I got to ask you something. They do it once. They come back and they say, look at what we've got. We've got a Range Rover. And they send it off to an auction and they don't get the full value for it, but they get, you know, they get 20 grand, 30 grand. It's a lot of money for a department. They take that money and they spend it on goodies. Maybe they buy some gym equipment or they buy some new tactical gear. Oh, yeah, well, that was a great story. There's a margarita machine that one department bought with confiscated money. Margarita machine. It's nothing to do. Whatever. Well, if they do it once and they get a little nibble, a little taste of what it's like to get this sum of money in, they go, well, yeah, we got a margarita machine, but now we, you know, I think we need a Pilates machine. You know, I think we need, you know, we need to build a sauna in the gym. And suddenly they're really motivated to start asset forfeiture proceedings against anybody they can find. And they become disproportionately interested in pursuing the types of crimes that are profitable. Now, I'm a stakeholder in this. I am talking about Irvine. By the way, Irvine PD, they're a great department. But I'm going to just say this. I'm a stakeholder in keeping Irvine safe. So I'm not super stoked on drug deals going down in Irvine. But I got a question for you, friends. What do you think I care about more? Do I care about 2 grams worth of coke or heroin or whatever going down in some parking lot behind Costco in Irvine, that deal? Or do I care about the guy that's burglarized my neighbor's house? I'm going to be honest with you. I could way more care about the burglary. You know what the funny thing in all of this is, especially in California? You get these departments that are financially motivated to pursue silly drug crimes, and they kind of have lost interest in going after burglars that, you know, I care about because I don't want to get my house broken into. Because the state, by the way, has decided that burglars is catch and release and they're not even going to put them away in jail because there's no room for them. But at any rate, it's always a question of money and resources. And I have friends in law enforcement that have told me time and time, they've said, look, we do this. This is what we do. And, oh, they know. Oh, that department. I think one department in Orange County that does a lot of this is Anaheim. And they gloat about it and they pay all big, big salaries and they've got 2 helicopters or 3 helicopters. They have a lot of money. They're well funded. And it's not just because of Disneyland and the various convention centers and arenas. It's because they pursue a lot of drug deals. And they have this ridiculous, excessive bailment, excessive fines policy that they pursue. I like going after crimes in the order of interest that society agrees matter. So in that sense, I would say, you know, we certainly don't like murder. We don't like financial crimes. We don't like drugs. But you know, and frankly, this is a little bit of my own personal prejudice coming in here. You know, we prioritize drug crimes very highly. And then this is an added incentive that keeps police, I think, focused on it unnecessarily. So it's an interesting thought. So I'm watching this case because it gets lost in the shuffle of things. It kind of gets, it's a dry subject. You know, you get various pieces on it, civil asset forfeiture, and it just doesn't, people don't understand what it means. But can you imagine if, let's say you've got a guy in your car, right, that has some drugs on him. And it, by the way, you think that this is a thing that just affects, you know, blue collar or you know, criminal type of people. But you could have a buddy of yours. You guys go out, get pulled over. The cops go, I think you guys have been drinking. Maybe you guys have. And next thing you know, they find some drugs, whatever. And now, potentially, they can take your car. If that happened to you, you would not be happy about that. And they don't even have to convict you of the charge, by the way, right? That's one thing that they can just do it. And they file it's a civil case. They file a lawsuit basically against your property. Well, I saw one of these cases that it was like a golden rooster. So it was like the state, like Nevada versus the golden rooster and things like that. South Dakota versus 15 impounded cats. That's an actual title of a case. So that's how they do it. I think it's BS. So now you know something, right? And you know there's this big case. Everybody's talking about Trump. Everybody's talking about Mueller. But there's this big case moving through the Supreme Court that is that potentially affects us all. And, you know, jail, by the way, nobody likes to go to, you know, the idea of going to jail for 100 years over 2 grams of coke is ridiculous. But affecting somebody financially, that's a big punishment, too. Right. And taking something away from that might be their biggest asset is crazy. So those are my thoughts. That's where I get those are my libertarian feelings coming out. Plus, as a lawyer, I feel a strong sense of injustice here. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Rogowski, Sam Nation, vigorously moistening dry subjects every week this time. If that makes no sense, listen to the previous segment. Okay. We've been following this caravan of illegal immigrants, the invasion on the border. The good folks over in Tijuana are getting pissed at these people, too. You see there you see that there's a number of citizens going and talking to reporters down there in Mexico. And they got Mexicans that are sounding like Trump. I've been to Mexico a number of times during the election and since the election. And I'm always astounded by how many people down there actually like Trump. They'll say, what do you think of Trump? And I will say, well, I like him. I'm sorry. I'm getting ready to begin to apologize. No, we like the guy, too, plain speaking. And he's right about a lot of things. Well, he's certainly right about these people. And here's a hilarious exchange that exactly tells you everything you need to know about narrative versus reality. And that you can even have a conflict between narrative and reality internally in a place like MSNBC. So here you have a reporter who's on the ground in this camp where all these migrants are holed up, waiting to be processed because they, of course, are all seeking asylum. And there are certain conditions that have to be met. And Trump is working out the deal and, you know, stalling this process, rightfully so. And this reporter that's on the ground, on the scene reporter for MSNBC, his name is Gaddy Schwartz. And he's talking to Stephanie Ruhle. And Ruhle, Velshi and Ruhle are talking amongst themselves. This is the show on MSNBC on Monday. And first Ruhle's talking about how they listen to the president. So you're in that temp camp and the president is saying that these people are all awful people and they're not. But we know they're women and children. These are innocents. These are people that are seeking protection from persecution back home. And the MSNBC reporter on the ground has an interesting response. So listen to this exchange.
They listen to the president who says it's not women and children, it's stone cold criminals. So you're in that tent camp. Besides that family, give us a profile of who is there mostly and what are they looking for?
Right. And it's very difficult because this has become such a polarizing issue. If we kind of take a walk, you'll be able to see for yourself. Again, this is the inner sanctum of the shelter. So you're going to see a lot of families here, a lot of women and children. But the truth is the majority of the people that are part of this caravan, especially outside, if we can make our way all the way over there, we'll show you the majority of them are men. So from what we've seen, the majority are actually men. And some of these men have not articulated that need for asylum. Instead, they have talked about, going to the United States for a better life and to find work.
Oops. Can you imagine if your Ruhle, Stephanie Ruhle there, you should have seen the look on her face. Yeah, daggers. The narrative is coming apart. And the longer, right? When company stays for a night, when you have company over to your house and they're only there one night. And how bad is it really? It's never that bad, right? Because whatever idiosyncrasies, whatever shortcomings that company has, whatever quirks they have, they're not around long enough to really become manifest. So as this caravan is moving through the Mexican the country, right, going through and they're stopping in each town for maximum of a day or two, what's going on? Nothing. They come, they go. Everybody in that town is like, okay, adios. And now they've hit the border. God forbid we use tear gas on the border to repel these people. So they're trying to scale the fence and we're shooting tear gas. That's a whole different story. So now they're stuck and now they're sheltering in place. And now I'm going to tell you, because we try to get ahead of the news curve. This week, we're going to hear more and more stories about bad things happening. We're going to hear about crime. We're going to hear about rape. We're going to hear about murder. We're going to hear about a lot of bad things happening. Because by virtue of this, you got a lot of men, right? MSNBC is looking at it. You got a lot of guys. They're frustrated. They thought they were going to walk across the border because that's how it was in the Obama years. Actually, it wasn't. We're going to get to that actually when we come back. You wait and see this story. And in this sense, this is where Trump captures the narrative. And if he sticks with it long enough, he's usually proven right. And I think that this story is going to turn around on the left big time. I don't care how many times Geraldo Rivera cries on Fox News. It doesn't matter. He can cry all he wants on the Five. And I'm going to tell you, I think Greg Gutfeld just needs to collect all those tears in his unicorn mug and sip them. Pinky raised. Sam Rojofsky back after this with more on this. More on this story right here. You're going to love it. Don't go anywhere.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. making radio great again for all of you out there. So you heard about this tear gas thing. Trump, being the racist a-hole that he is, tear gassed a bunch of women and children who were at the border peaceably gathering, lawfully, et cetera, et cetera. That's the narrative, right? If you're watching CNN, that is the story. So then people kind of awkwardly, some of them, CNN, that when Obama was president, they did the same thing. You know, the Border Patrol would have rushes of people, trying to cross the border and climb the fence, and they would occasionally fire tear gas into the crowd. My absolute favorite response to this occurred on The View. Sonny Hostin admits what everybody else is thinking, but is, I think, a little more. These women are so dumb. God, if you want to. I tell you what, I'm happily married. But if you're not and you think your wife is a nag and she's out of town and you miss her, watch The View. That's best advice I can give you. Okay, so the Sonny admits to what everybody else is thinking, but is smart enough to not articulate out loud, which is, I don't care what Obama did. It's not relevant now. Play the tape.
President Obama is no longer in office.
Exactly.
President Trump is in office.
And he's destroying the country.
And this but Obama defense, doesn't work for me. That's not to say using tear gas. I think it's immoral when you're using tear gas against children. But ProPublica just found that the Trump administration has secretly continued to separate kids from their families. The Obama administration
never did that.
But I'm just, the ACLU says that kind of separation is unprecedented. So this whole, but Obama did it. I don't care what Obama did. I don't care what Trump is doing right now.
Yes. We don't care what our God, our Savior, the Almighty Barack Hussein Obama did. None of that's relevant. What we care about, ladies, is what's happening right now. This Trump, he is separating children and he's gassing them. Trump is just a whole bundle of contradictions. He's on the same side. He's very pro-Israel. So he gasses children, separates them, and also supports Israel at the expense of Palestine. They're going for that narrative. That's what they're getting at. They're actually I tend to believe what people say. So when they call Trump Adolf Hitler, then they talk about him gassing kids, separating children, imprisoning families. You understand that it is part of a broader strategy to support their arguments for why Trump is Hitler. Had to be serious here in case you weren't following my humor. But there it is. I've given it to you the humor way, and I've also tried to explain it the logical way. So that is absolutely how these people think. They do not care. They do not want to hear that Obama did arrested people at the border. They don't want to hear that Obama deported more people than Bush. They don't want to hear any reality. The only thing they care about is that they love Obama and he was just so fresh. He was so fresh. He was such a cool guy. And he cared. He cared. And Trump, Satan. Liberals, and I've said this over and over again on this program, I hate to sound like a broken record, liberals do not give a rat's rear end about substance. Substance is irrelevant to them. Their entire world is based on emotion, on the feelings that run through them, their impulses. And logic, man, logic, God, you might as well pull out a clove of garlic and a cross to a vampire. You pull out logic on a liberal, they are literally going to melt and run for the hills. Sam Rejofsky, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Berjovsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. It is Friday, and as such, I am in jeans. On Fridays, I wear jeans. Monday through Thursday, I wear a suit, slacks, and such. And so I really enjoy my one day a week when I'm able to go to the office in jeans. I always wear a button-down shirt and then a sports jacket, right? A coat. But there's something really nice about jeans, especially when it's still a little damp outside, right? It was raining yesterday. Cats and dogs. Something for everybody, I suppose. And I like today that I'm in jeans. So just wanted to share that with you. Now, I'll tell you who's not feeling very comfortable. You know this guy, Dr. Corsi. You know who he is? Jerome Corsi. He was involved with the Trump campaign fairly early on. He's an associate of Roger Stone. Roger Stone, if you'll recall, is a longtime Republican operative. Really smart guy. Bit of a gadfly, but an early supporter of Donald Trump. And we got to party with him a little bit over at the Republican convention in Cleveland. And I quite like him. He's a fellow that totes around in seersucker suits. And what's there not to like about somebody like that? So at any rate, Jerome Corsi now is entangled in this Mueller investigation. And I told you at the beginning of the program, I said the real thing that's the scalps to be had here are going to be mostly dealing with perjury, right? And it's the whole gotcha, the lying. If any wrong statements told under oath or to a federal agent, i.e., any member of Mueller's team, that's where punishments are going to be. So there's Jerome Corsi supposedly has been charged. He's one of the people close to Trump right now. There's all this scuttlebutt. Oh my goodness, Jerome Corsi, he's going to plead. Is he going to cop to a plea deal? Is he not? The noose is tightening around Donald Trump. His close associates are getting implicated. Oh, the end is near. So here is Jerome Corsi explaining what this count against him is all about. This is on NBC News with Anna Schechter yesterday, Thursday.
Let me explain to you what that count is about. I had this 17-inch laptop, and by the way, I turned over the laptop and the time machine, my cell phone, signed all my email accounts, gave them the password, username, consent forms. I gave them my Verizon permission to go after my Verizon phone calls. I gave them everything they wanted. Now, the problem was, I quit using that laptop in 2018.
So you're saying you had totally forgotten about this?
Yes, and in fact, the original testimony I gave was before I had seen my 2016 emails. Now, what they're charging me with was what I said on the first day, which was wrong, because I hadn't seen the emails. Okay, as soon as I opened up the time machine and they said, well, Dr. Corsi, go home and review your emails and come back. When I did, they allowed me to amend my testimony. Mm-hmm. So they're charging me on the original mistake I made and not reflecting that they allowed me to amend that statement.
This all happens, right? This is common stuff. The idea is to get any charges against any people close to Trump and to pressure them, to put them in such a bind that they will turn on Trump and that they will testify against him. This is exactly what Ken Starr did in the Whitewater probe. You'll remember when he went after Clinton associates Jim McDougal and his wife. What was the purpose of it? Jim McDougal fought it. I don't know if you remember this. He fought it all the way to trial, lost a trial, and was facing 88 years in prison. And it was only at that point that he was like, yeah, Ken Starr, let's talk. And Susan McDougal refused. She ended up going to prison for a period of time. But at the point in time, and this history is always instructive on this point, you see here, you know, if anything of what Jerome Corsi is saying here is like, look, they asked him about an email. He said, I never wrote an email like that. Then, you know, it's from 2-3 years ago. He's clearly not hiding anything. He's turning over everything over to them. Your intentions really don't matter. The statute is strict. Did you tell the truth or not? Intent has nothing to do with it. And so in these cases where you get caught on a technicality, are facing a large amount of jail time potentially, what do you do? And this is where Cohen, you know, I don't know if Cohen deliberately lied or not when he was speaking to Congress, when he was testifying, when he spoke to Mueller. I don't know if he was deliberately lying or not. But now he's pleaded guilty to another charge of lying to Congress. That happened yesterday or the day before. And in so doing, is facing even more jail time. And it comes then on the heels of news that he is cooperating even more with Mueller. Now, I'm sitting here as a lawyer, as a political observer, and I'm hearing these sort of really convoluted technical charges against some of these people. A lot of pressure being applied. I see a guy who I don't know. I've never met Michael Cohen, but from hearing him talk even before all the scandal broke out, I think he's an idiot. I think he's a weak person. Trump is right. Called him a weak guy. He is not a strong minded person. He's really in a bad predicament. He's facing many, many, many years in prison. And I will tell you this. One of the things that happened to Jim McDougal back in the Whitewater probe, Ken Starr, back in, this is, you know, mid to late 90s. What happened there was Jim McDougal wasn't considered even a great witness because he was composing, right? He wasn't just singing. Alan Dershowitz always says, you know, there's a risk if you sing, you know, as a witness, if you rat your principal out, right? But there's all a risk that when you're facing so much pressure from Mueller that, or from any special prosecutor, that at that moment you begin to make stuff up because you want to get yourself out of a predicament. And that makes your testimony really less, it's less substantial in court. When you hear little droplets of things like Mueller might be overplaying his hand, this is what people are referring to. You can push too hard as a prosecutor and end up with really looking like you've gone too far, one, but also pushing people to make things up in order to get themselves out of a predicament. And that ends up totally destroying and dooming your case. So far, I'll sum it up this way. Nothing that I've heard really puts Trump in a bad spot, necessarily legally. Politically, all of this is damaging. But I like that it's clearing up now. It's not clearing up close to a presidential election. So, it's not going to last forever. The report's going to come out. And I think, by and large, so far, nothing terribly damaging. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Speaking of our seersuckered friend, Roger Stone, he gave a little press conference or whatnot and opined this week that Trump would not be seeking re-election. I don't know if you heard this. I don't believe it for a minute. I don't buy that. I don't buy it for 1 minute. Trump, I could see him if he was on a bad day. When everybody's out to murder him, and even Ivanka is saying, "Dad, you blew it." On a really bad day, Ivanka's mad at him, Melania's mad at him, Barron is ghosting him at the dinner table. I could see on a bad day that Trump is, you know, would say an offhand comment to somebody. He's like, you all be damned. I'm done with this. But at the end of the day, he's a fighter and he's in it to win it. And he's going to beat that. I'm going to tell you something. The primary challenge thing is a weak sauce. Yeah, Kasich. Yeah. straight after the holidays, go from dark meat to dark horse. John Kasich, former governor, retiring, outgoing governor of Ohio, and one of the deans of the Never Trump movement, Mr. Vanilla himself, has been saying that he's not ruling it out, that he's going to run and challenge Trump in the Republican primary. None of this is going to come to great fruition. And Trump still has plenty of time to lock all this down. So that's what I think about all of this. Anyway, it's been a great program. It's flown by. 2 hours of radio excellence in the can. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, have a great weekend. I will see you here next Friday, same time, same place, fighting the insanity, as always. Sam Rogowski, over and out.